Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Peches. Just a couple minutes from now, we're going to be starting the 10th parak of the Masechta, really an entirely new subject matter, new topic in the Masechta, but we have a little bit to go to finish up the 9th parak, which we're going to do right now, obviously. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf tafa belongs to Echnishmas Lupin Zoltzman. Just a couple of points that Gemara just wants to go over before finishing the parak. The ninth parak was a short parak, extraordinarily short parak. It started us back on Daf Pei Dalet, and now Pei Zayin Amud Beis. It comes to a conclusion, and as Tosfos points out, it's a review. It was a wonderful review of some of the just basic halachas regarding Yibam, Chalitza, and the Kohanim and Truma, and okay. Just a wonderful review. And the last thing we were going over in the end of the perek was how a child affects two halachas in the Torah. How a child affects the mitzvah of Yibam and how a child affects the ability or the disability of eating truma. So those are two halachas where children are going to affect, and they're not the same. And the Gemara wants to know, why can't we compare the halachas of Yibam and how children affect Yibam to that of the mitzvah of eating truma and how children affect truma? So the Gemara gives simanim. The Gemara is going to let's just go over what's going to happen now in the Gemara, and that is the Gemara is going to try to throw out a couple of kavachomers, and the Gemara is going to end up rejecting every one of the kavachomers, meaning that the two halachas are not really comparable. That's really what's going to happen in the course of the end of this perek siman. Amar le lo nase maase b'misa nase v'lo nase b'vlad yavam v'shuma yibam v'shuma siman. Okay, good. Now the Gemara gave us a mnemonic. If you want to commit this Gemara to memory, which is what they used to do back in the good old days, so then you'll go over the mnemonic and it'll help you remember the upcoming Gemara. Amar le Rav Yehuda mi iskarta le Rav. Okay, so the Gemara engages a conversation between Amarayim. Lo nase meisim kachaim ling in yibam. How about this? How about we don't make meisim kachaim by yibam? As we already went over yesterday, let's go over quickly today. We know that if the husband dies and leaves the wife with the child, so then we know there's no mitzvah of Yibam. The mitzvah of Yibam was only if the wife was left with no child, but with the child there's no mitzvah of Yibam. As we went over yesterday, but let's go over it again today. What if, Rahman al-Islam, God forbid, the child dies later on? 5 years later, 10 years later, the child dies. And so now it turns out, Lamafreya, that the husband died with no child. Is there now a mitzvah of Yibam? So the answer is no. No, there's absolutely no mitzvah of Yibam. Meaning once the husband dies and there was a child at that point, at the moment of death, so then there's no mitzvah of Yibam. Correct. Agreed. Which is good. So you're setting us up for the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, "Mikav haChomer umamba makum shasav lamin arishin kivlamin hashen laposam natruma loasam meisim kechayim makum shalawasav lamin arishin kivlamin hashen laposam neyibam ain odin shalonasam meisim kechayim." So the Gemara says, "So let's compare." So in the world of truma, we know that in the world of truma, children that come from the first marriage are going to affect the ability for her to eat, and meanwhile the loasa meisim kechaim when it comes to truma, we don't treat dead children as if they're alive. Meaning once the child is dead, so that's it. We revert back to the previous situation. So when it comes to the world of yibum, so the Gemara says, so shouldn't we do the same thing? Essentially, Hedy, the Gemara is asking exactly your question. So let's go. Let's revert back to the previous situation. Previous situation is her husband died and she has no children. So right, and that's the argument. The argument is that in the world of Yibam, children that you had from the first marriage have no bearing on the mitzvah of Yibam. Meaning she was married previously, she had a child previously. Okay. But that's not going to affect the status of Yibam, meaning if Lamaisa, she's married to her second husband, and the husband dies without a child, there's a mitzvah of Yibam. Okay, so let's say also that if children from a previous marriage aren't going to affect her status of Yibam, so if she had a child and they died, for sure should revert back to the previous situation of her requiring Yibam. Ain odin shelo nase meisim kechayim. So tamalomar derecha derechein olam v'chol nesivoseh shalom. So the Gemara says it can't be. In other words, we have a general principle of Torah. In other words, one of those super principles in the Torah, which is that the ways of the Torah are pleasant. I mean, the Torah is never, one of the mitzvahs of the Torah is never going to put somebody in an unbelievably uncomfortable or awkward scenario or painful scenario. So imagine that her husband died, left a child, 5 years later, 10 years later, the child dies. Now what's and just to make this even more dramatic, give it a little more drama, she married somebody else in between. And so now what are you going to say? You're going to say now that because the child died, and now it turns out retroactively that the original husband died below banim, and now there's a mitzvah on the brother to do the mitzvah of yibum to this woman who may very well in fact be remarried? Gemara says it's impossible. The ways of the Torah are pleasant, and we're never going to arrive at this scenario. Very good. And I was just about to point out, Phil, you read my mind. So not my mind, Rashi's mind. And what in fact is the Gemara suggesting? Meaning at this point in time, 10 years later, the child dies and she's remarried to another man. What is even the Gemara suggesting? If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi writes Darched Darchei Noam. No, not that Rashi. The previous Rashi. Lo Nasem Esim. What the Gemara is suggesting now is that the Zika get reawakened, and imyamos, but not la'achar's mind if the child dies after some time. And then, now let's look at the next Rashi, Darched Darchei Noam, v'zusha yolabem v'lo nizka liyavam, v'nisis l'shuk u'meis bana im tomer tachlots. So what we're suggesting now is that she'll have to do chalitza with her former brother-in-law. Right. In other words, now she's married to another man, and harehi mitgane al ba'ala, and it'll be so upsetting to her current marriage. Her current marriage, her husband's going to look at her. Where are you going right now? What's going on with you and this guy? You're getting chalitza from this guy? I don't understand. We've been married for 10 years. What are you doing chalitza with this man for?
Why not making an exception?
Again, the Gemara. I guess. In other words, the way the Gemara is viewing it, it's not a terrible suggestion. I guess the way the Gemara is viewing it is that either the halacha is there's a zika, there's no zika, right? That's basically it's all or nothing. So im tamar tachlos harim megana bala Rashi hilka chal karchach bein ein la b'shas misa kamar v'hari yeshlo. Okay, fine. So everything is snapshotted at the time of the death of her husband.
Would it be a difference if the child died, let's say, the first week?
Yeah, again. So you're going back to Hedy's point. Let's make some chilukim.
No, I'm saying it doesn't matter if it
was... The halach is...
If it doesn't live 30 days, it's not a...
Okay, that's it, right. That goes back to the previous halacha. Right. In other words, we discussed that earlier. Meaning, what if she was pregnant? What if she miscarried? Yeah. What if the baby didn't make it to the 30 days? Okay, but that goes back to just whether or not there was or wasn't a child. Yeah. But if there was a child and the child was a viable child, that's it.
How old is the child supposed to be?
In other words, again, we're not going to make it. As long as there was a child, there's no Zika. There's no longer any bond. Okay, next. Okay, so good. So there was a Havamina that 10 years later, if the child dies, there should be a Zika. Again, the Gemara says, Darched Darchei Noam. No. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's do Tchias HaMesim as it relates to the Halach of Truma. I don't really mean Tchias HaMesim, but you know what I mean. Meaning giving the status of dead child as if it's alive. Now again, we'll start with Yibum. Again, we're constructing a Kavachomer. In the world of Yibum, having children from a previous marriage have no bearing whatsoever on her current status and her current husband. And meanwhile, in the world of Yibum, so we do have tchias amesim, meaning if you have a child, that's it. You had a child, and even if the child died, rachman al tzlan, the child is still considered as if it was there. So malkum shasav lamin erishin kavlamin hasheni. In the world of truma, where you see we do regard children from a previous marriage as it relates to the status of eating truma, laposlam and a truma eno din shenas amesim kechayim. So for sure now, if we're ready to regard children from a previous marriage, shouldn't we regard children from this marriage? And even if, God forbid, they die, shouldn't we view those children as if they're still alive? So, okay, the Gemara says again, it's a kavachomer. It may be, in fact, a good kavachomer, but the Gemara says, but we have a pasuk. The pasuk says, Zara ain la. If she doesn't have a child, she can go back. She's chozer. She can go back to eating truma. Okay, again, you see what's happening? Again, the Gemara is just trying kavachomer after kavachomer. Let's try to make children from a previous marriage have significance in the world of Yibam. And mikavachomer, ma ba makam shalom asa meitzim kechaim linyan truma asa vlamin erishin kevlamin hasheni. So again, the starting point of this kavachomer is truma. And in the world of truma, if the child dies, so that's it, she's chozer, she can go back. And meanwhile, we do regard children from a previous marriage to affect her status of eating truma. So makam shalom asa meitzim linyan yibam ena din shalasa vlamin erishin kevlamin hasheni. So in the world of Yibam, where if they have a child and the child dies, we view that child as if it's alive to exempt her from the mitzvah of Yibam. So shouldn't children from a previous marriage also exempt from the mitzvah of Yibam? Tamalam ubein ein lo, v'ha ein lo. So the Gemara says again, it's a kavachomer, but it's not going to work because we have a pasuk. The pasuk says that if the man dies without a child, so then there's a mitzvah of Yibam, and he died without a child. So, v'lo na'aseh v'lamin erishin k'v'lamin hashen l'chuma mikavachomer. One last attempt at a kavachomer, and that is, how about not regarding children from a previous marriage as it relates to chuma? But makam sh'aseh meitzim k'chem l'pocham min ha'yibam lo'aseh v'lamin erishin k'v'lamin hashen. And again, one last permutation of this kavachomer. Look, in the world of Yibam, so we treat children, even if they're dead, as if they're alive. And meanwhile, in the world of Yibam, we don't regard children from a previous marriage as significant as it relates to Yibam. So Malkum Shalom Asim Kachim Lingin Truma, Ino Din Shalon Asav Lamin Arishin of Lamin Hasheni. So the Gemara says, so now when we go into the world of Truma, we know that if the child dies, she's Choseres. So you see that once the child is no longer there, she returns back to her family's house. So a child from a previous marriage, so that shouldn't affect her ability or inability to eat Truma. Tamar Lama Ein La Vaha Yeshla. So the Gemara says, again, it's a Kavachomer, it's lovely, it's nice Kavachomer. But we have a Pasuk, we have a Drasha. The Torah says, Ein La. If she doesn't have a child, she's Choseres. But Lamaisa here, she does have a child, and she does have a child, even though it's not from this husband, even though it's from a previous husband. But Eino Choseres, she does not go back to her father's house. Hadralach Yesh Mutaris. Okay, so what did we do in the last 10 minutes of Daf, in the last 20 lines of Gemara? We flexed our Kavachomer muscle. We learned how to make Kavachomers. But the Gemara says, okay, making Kavachomers is wonderful, but you have Pesukim and you have Joshua's, so that doesn't... Yeah, the kavachomers are not going to stand up against a drasha. Hadralach Yesh Mutaris, that's the end of the ninth parak. We begin now the tenth parak of the Masechta, and here we begin. We begin now the second half of the Masechta, if you will. Although, truth of the matter is, the 6th, 7th, and 8th prakim of the Masechta really did deviate away from the world of Yibam and discussed some larger issues, discussions of Bia and Arelus, and so we already took a significant turn away from the mitzvah of Yibam and the discussion of Yibam, but now we are more or less going to separate ourselves from the world of Yibam. Yibam will come up in the 10th parak through the 15th parak, but as an ancillary point. The main discussion that's going to be taking place over here is going to be an extraordinarily serious topic, and that's the topic of an aguna. Now, the aguna in the modern context has a really different connotation than that which we're going to be discussing in the course of the Mishnah. Unfortunately, aguna, as we discussed in the modern context, is discussing a woman whose husband's refusing to give her a get. Okay, the Gemara had less of a problem with that because back in the good old days in the Bismana Gemara, if somebody was reluctant, a little difficult to deal with, so Beis Din was a little bit more powerful and forceful, and Beis Din made sure that he gave her a get. Okay, and Dai L'Chacham B'Remiza. Okay, that's how it was done in the good old days. But still, there were issues of aguna back in the good old days, and the issues of aguna occurred when a husband went away and he never came back, and we don't know what happened, and we don't have reports about what exactly happened. We don't have eyewitness testimony, and so what is this woman to do? In other words, she right now is a married woman, married to a man who we don't know. We no longer know the whereabouts of such a man. Now, obviously, from the perspective of a man, that obviously be much less of an issue. It'd be really, quite frankly, none issue. In other words, if he lost his wife, so then he can marry another woman. Okay. But for the woman, obviously... Correct. And so, but from the woman's perspective, however, if she loses her husband, when I say loses, I mean literally lost, meaning he doesn't know where she is. So obviously this presents for her an unbelievable challenge in that she's stuck. She's a naguna. She's chained to a man that she does not know where he is right now. Maybe he's dead, maybe he's not, simply do not know. So what we're going to be seeing over the course of this parak, and today's daf is really just an important daf in terms of understanding the sensitivity that the Chachamim had towards women, and what the Chachamim are ready to do. We're gonna bend halach a little bit. Okay, I don't mean to be controversial. It's never my goal, and I'm usually not. But you're going to see whether basically what the Chachamim did over here is they bent, not break, but bend. Okay, that's I know we're speaking semantics over here, but you'll see. We'll discuss in much greater detail how it is what the Chachamim did in order to allow this woman to remarry. Under certain circumstances, which is obviously what we're going to be discussing right now, but under certain circumstances, there is going to be a way for this woman to remarry. Not in every case. You need something to work with, but if you have something to work with, even though it doesn't meet the normal threshold, the normal standards of what information is usually valid in the court of Jewish law, but nevertheless, under certain circumstances, going to allow her to remarry, that is the topic of discussion in this parak. Obviously makes for a very interesting discussion. Say all that by way of introduction. Let me just say a couple more words of introduction before we start the parak. There are really two questions that we're going to have to deal with in the course of the discussion. There's the why and there's the how. Okay, and it's funny, the how is not really even discussed in the Gemara. The why is discussed in the Gemara, but not the how. Meaning, why did the Chachamim allow her to get married? Okay, but that's very simple, because of a sensitivity, meaning the understanding of the plight of a woman who lost her husband, doesn't know where he is, it's important that she has an ability to remarry. So why it is that she's allowed to get married, so that's understood, and the Gemara is going to speak to that. The how, meaning how can they allow her to get married if we don't have two witnesses coming in and telling us that they actually saw with testimony, with eyewitness testimony, that they saw that her husband has died. So the Gemara said that the Gemara doesn't spell out, meaning how did the Chachamim allow her to do it? Now, it will become apparent in the Gemara, and I'll give it away now because just to help us understand the Mishnah a little bit, it will become apparent in the Gemara that a lot of the burden of proof and fact-finding is going to be put on her shoulders. Okay. She, because she doesn't have the necessary information that her husband is dead, she herself is expected to do her due diligence in terms of making sure that her husband, in fact, is dead. Now, exactly what she's going to do, the Mishnah of the Gemara doesn't spell it out, meaning what exactly is going to be for her due diligence. But an expectation on her part is going to be that she's going to need to research this matter. How do we know this? It's very clear. Because what we're going to find out in the Mishnah is, what happens if she was wrong? Okay, in any area of life, there's always risk reward. Okay, you don't need me to tell you. Okay, if you want high reward, you need high risk. Okay, that's just the facts of life. And so here also, in other words, she wants to get remarried. She doesn't know if her husband is dead. So obviously, the Chachamim are looking to reward her, but buyer beware. In other words, if you want to do that. Make such a decision in life, which the Chachamim are allowing her to do, but there also comes with a great risk. And that great risk, of course, is that if she doesn't do her due diligence and the husband walks back in again, the husband who she thought was dead, so now what? So now she's a married woman who is sleeping with another man, perhaps even fathering a child with another man. The child is a mamzer. In other words, obviously, you're looking at a reward, but with a heavy risk. And so what the Chachamim are basically going to try to communicate to her is that you can do so under certain circumstances, but at your own risk. And just to make sure that she clearly understands that she's doing so at her own risk, and a lot of the burden of fact-finding is going to be put on her shoulders, so therefore the Chachamim basically said to her, here's what's going to happen if you are wrong. Aside from the quote-unquote natural consequences of being with another man, even though you're already married, and if having a child, that child is going to be a mamzer, but the Chachamim are going to unload a number of other penalties upon her if, in fact, she was wrong. And again, the reason why the Chachamim did that is just basically to articulate to her, I know, it's a heavy-handed message, but basically to articulate to her that, look, you could do so under certain circumstances, but beware, and there's risk. Okay, that with all that stated, let's see the Mishnah in Sinai. Isha shalach ba'ala medina sayam. A woman whose husband went across the ocean, and they said to her, your husband died. Who said to her? Who's the Mishnah talking about when the Mishnah says that they say to her? Okay, so as the Gemara is going to be very clear, I'll just give it away right now. Well, the Mishnah here is not talking about two witnesses. If two witnesses say to her that her husband died, so we behave on the practice on the testimony of two witnesses, meaning two witnesses in a court of Jewish law, that works, obviously. That's the way two things can establish the matter. So what the Mishnah over here is describing is not where two witnesses come over to her, but rather one witness. One witness comes over to her and says to her that her husband is dead. Now, what credibility, what status does one witness have? Stay tuned. That's going to be most of today's daf.
If two come in and then the husband reappears, then the consequences are the same for the woman, no?
No. She is a onus.
Why would it be written there?
Okay, she's
honest,
but she still has to be
right. Okay, that's a good question.
The child is not a manzer.
Huh? And the child is not a manzer. The child from the second husband?
Right. No.
By ones. Okay.
Excuse my grammar, but is that plural?
Yeah, I understand. I totally understood. Okay. All I'm doing is I'm not trying to sell you anything. I just you'll see the Gemara is going to say it. I'm not breaking any ground.
One witness.
Correct. I'm not breaking any ground over here. Va'amr le'meiz ba'alech v'nisis v'achar kach ba'ala, and then her husband comes back. So here we go. So one witness told her that her husband dead. She remarried. Her husband comes back again. Okay, this is the highest degree of drama, obviously. So, teitzim mizeh mizeh. So here we go. And really, the entire Mishnah, and it's going to be long, but the entire Mishnah now is going to talk about what exactly the penalties are for her having remarried. And again, going back to my introduction, the reason why is that the Chachamim gave her the allowance to get married, but again, with the understanding that this is on your shoulders, you're going to risk. Again, with risk comes high reward, but also comes high risk. So the Gemara says, and here's what's going to happen. She needs a divorce from both husbands, from her first husband and second husband. Now, in actuality, she doesn't need a divorce from the second husband. She's married to the first husband. There is no institution of marriage with the second husband, but again, part of the Gzera de Rabbanan, she has to leave both of them. She needs to get from both of them. And she gets none of her ksuva. And again, those four sections of the ksuva that we described in the previous parak. Neither from the first nor from the second, she gets nothing. And if she took from either one of them, she has an obligation to return. Now the child will be a mamzer from the first husband and the second husband. From the second husband, we totally understand the child is going to be a mamzer. Right, but let's ask the obvious question. What does the Mishnah mean when the Mishnah says she has a child with the first husband, the child is going to be a mamzer? The Mishnah cannot mean that retroactively we're going back now to the first husband and we're going to take a look at her child that she had with the first husband and declare that child to be a mamzer. That can't be what the Mishnah means. Take a look at Rashi right here on the Mishnah. Rashi writes, what does the Mishnah mean when it says that the child from the first husband is a mamzer? Rashi writes, I'm reading Rashi, Vavlan mamzer mizeh mizeh, im yalda misheni mamzer gamur. Okay, she has a child from the second husband, that's a mamzer gamur. V'im shuv hechzira rishon, v'yalda lo have mamzer midivrayim. If the first husband takes her back, and then has a child with her subsequent to that. So the Chachamim said, look, part of our kenas, part of our penalty is that we don't sanction that marriage, therefore that's an unlawful marriage, and therefore, midrabbanan, that child that you're going to yield with that first husband, subsequent to his return, is going to be a mamzer midrabbanan. Neither of the husbands are going to be mitami for her, meaning if this is a Kohen, so we know that a Kohen is mitami for his wife if she dies, But again, part of the kenas, the rabbanon, is that neither husband is going to be mitamer for her. V'lo zeh, v'zeh, zakai lo b'mitziyasa, v'lo b'masi yedeh, v'lo b'afars nedareha. The husband is not entitled, either husband, is not entitled to any of her ma'asi yadayim, and if she something she finds normally goes to her husband, not here. Ma'asi yadayim, her earnings go to her husband, not here. Lo b'afars nedara, the husband has the right to annul her vows, not here. Okay, and again, neither. If she's a Bas Yisrael, she will become disqualified from the kuna because she had a Bia Psula, and that Bia Psula is going to disqualify her from the kuna. As a Bas Levi, she will be disqualified from Meiser. If she is a Bas Kohen, she can no longer eat Truma. Neither of the Yorshin, her inheritors from either side are going to be Yorsha Ksuba. The Gemara is going to explain what that means. At this juncture in the Mishnah, that line of the Mishnah is difficult to understand. And finally, what if the brothers of either one of the husbands, die, the brothers will do Chalitza but not Yibam. The brothers of either one of them will do Chalitza, not Yibam. Brothers of the first husband, we certainly understand. Brothers of the second husband, again, according to the Torah, they're not married. Right. Her husband's still alive. So once again, stay tuned. The Gemara is going to discuss that as well in terms of what exactly, why chalitza is required from both sets of husbands. Okay. Adkan, that was a long sentence. But in a nutshell, the sentence says, again, one witness, and I'm telling you it's one witness because the Gemara is going to say it's one witness. One witness comes back and reports that her husband's dead. It's not two witnesses. She can get married, but at her own risk. And what is she looking to risk? So the Mishnah gave us a long list of things that she's looking to risk if, in fact, she's wrong. So she needs to be right. Rabbi Yossi says that the ksuva is coming from the state of the first husband. And again, when we get to the Gemara, we're going to understand what Rabbi Yossi is talking about better. Rabbi Lazar says that the first husband is in fact entitled to her findings, her earnings, and the right to annul her vows. Rabbi Elazar obviously disagrees with the Tanakhama on this point. Again, stay tuned. The Gemara is going to discuss it. And finally, the last opinion in the Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon, Omer Biyasu Chalitzisaz Me'achav Sharishon, Poteret Sarasav Ein Avlad Mimenu Mamzer. If you have either the Bia or the Chalitza of the brother of the first husband, will exempt all the other co-wives, and the child resulting from that is not going to be a mamzer. Okay, Rabbi Yossi is arguing on the Tanakhama, and again, later we're going to be discussing Rabbi Yossi in more detail. Okay, now, what if she remarries Shelo Bereshus Beis Din without the permission of Beis Din? What does that mean, without the permission of Beis Din? In other words, she didn't need the permission of Beis Din. If you take a look at Rashi over here, the Mishnah is describing the following scenario. Shabau Shnei Edim, I'm reading Rashi. Shabau Shnei Edim V'amr Meis Baalech V'niseis Me'atzma Sharei Lo Haizat Tzricha Le'etar Beis Din. What happened was is that the two witnesses came and said their husband's dead. Two witnesses? Good. That's testimony. So now, now she's totally allowed to remarry. So, muteres lachzor lo. So now she remarries the second husband. Lo and behold, her husband came back. The two witnesses were wrong. Well, here, it wasn't risk-reward. Meaning she, on the basis of the witness, on the testimony, on the apparent credibility of the two witnesses, she remarried. So everything over here was perfectly legitimate. And so therefore, if her husband comes back, she can go back to her original husband. What about all the acts of bia that she had with the second man? Ones. That falls under the category of ones. Rashi writes, Mutesach Zolo Danu Sehi. She's considered an ones. Now, I understand it's not what we normally view as ones. Ones is rape, it's violation. But over here, being that she remarried on the basis of two witnesses, it's tantamount, it is ones. Meaning it's not tantamount, it is ones. Ones means that she was forced. She was, in other words, she was not an active participant in this whatsoever. She was a passive participant. Again, it's not rape per se, but it's that she did some. She did so. Al pi edim. She did so with witnesses.
Maybe it should be
check of divorce their wife?
The din of hazama? No. You know, I mean, the din of hazama is only when a second set of witnesses come and send any money. It's okay, but
when witnesses testified, didn't they testify?
Yeah. Meaning, when it says alo apid beis din, it means we don't need beis din. Meaning, we're going through the regular jurisprudence of halacha. It means that there's no. You don't need an act of beis din to allow it to do it. It's just, it goes through, it flows through the regular laws of...
Do the two witnesses testify in front of Beis Din, or do they just tell the...
No. It's done in front of Beis Din. All the Mishnah means when it says Lo Api Beis Din is, it's not an act of Beis Din.
But it's sanctioned by
Beis Din. Right. It's done through Beis Din, obviously, but you don't need a special act of Beis Din. As opposed to, let's go to the next card of the case of the Mishnah. Nisa is Api Beis Din, but if she remarries based on Beis Din, on the basis of Beis Din, meaning that she needed Beis Din. It was an act of Beis Din that allowed her to marry because there was only one witness who came forward, so Tetze, so now she has to get a divorce to Pturim and a Karban. Give me a moment. Upturim and a carbon, and she's going to be exempt from a carbon. Why? Because once Beis Din gives her the allowance to remarry, so you're not going to bring a carbon. You don't bring a carbon based on something that was done under the auspices of Beis Din. We'll come back. We'll discuss that in more detail. Lo nisas api Beis Din, teitzim v'chayavim b'karban. If she didn't get married through Beis Din, so meaning that she got married with witnesses, so she's going to have to bring a karban. Teitzim v'chayavim b'karban. So she would in fact have to bring a karban. Rashi over here explains. The chayev is carbon to shogegasi because she falls under the category of shogeg. The ains are honestly pater min a carbon. In terms of a carbon, it's not considered an ones per se because ibay le la atmuye because she should have waited. Yav v'koch beis din shepotcher min a carbon shen a carbon. So in this regard, Beis Din will in this limited regard, Beis Din will be better for her, and that Beis Din will excuse her from a carbon, but witnesses will not. If Beis Din gave an allowance to remarry, and she goes ahead and she's mekalkel and she, you know, literally messes things up, but in other words, it turns out that it was that her husband came back, so she will have to bring a carbon because the only allowance that Beis Din gave her was that to remarry. Okay, much to discuss at this end of the Mishnah, but right now we're going to quickly go to the Gemara and we're going to take it from the top. Yeah. So okay, the Mishnah here doesn't talk about it. It's not the focus of the Mishnah. They violated an Isser in the Torah of giving false testimony. Do witnesses themselves have to make any type of remuneration for doing so?
Okay, if it's intentional or not.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I don't remember. I assume yes, but I don't remember off the top of my head. You'll forgive me. Okay. The Gemara right away compares the beginning of the Mishnah to the end of the Mishnah. At the end of the Mishnah, it says that she got married, she remarried, shelo b'rishus, so without permission, without Beis Din's permission, she's allowed to go back to her husband. What does that mean, shelo b'rishus Beis Din? What does that mean, ela b'edim? Okay, like we said in the Mishnah, but the Gemara now is obviously making a larger point. Obviously, when it says that we don't need Beis Din, it means because we have witnesses. So we don't need an act of Beis Din. Mechlal d'resha b'rishus Beis Din. So it means, therefore, that in the Reisha, in the first case of the Mishnah, that long list of things that are going to happen to her if she's wrong. So on what basis did she get married? Beis Din. But on what basis did Beis Din allow her to get married? One witness. Uve'eid echad. So you see that it's one witness. Okay. Now, for the next, I'd say about almost Amud of Gemara, here's what the Gemara is going to think. Oh, so what do you see from all this? We believe one witness. Okay, it's a Havamina. It's a big Havamina. In fact, we're going to see that in a number of areas of Halacha, we do believe one witness. Not when it comes to Erva, when it comes to any type of Isser Erva, Arayus, We don't believe one witness. We need two witnesses. Okay. But right now, for about an amud of Gemara, the Gemara is going to think, oh, you see that one witness has credibility. And why not? Meaning it's a wonderful Havamina. It seems to be correct. Because what did the Mishnah say? Again, just by contrasting the beginning and the end of the Mishnah, the end of the Mishnah is talking about two witnesses. The beginning of the Mishnah is talking about one witness. Now, understand, by the way, the question is excellent in terms of grammar of the Mishnah. Meaning the Mishnah does say, Amrullah, they say to her. Okay, so understood that the grammar is not perfect, but still, just by contrasting, the beginning of the Mishnah is talking about one witness. And she's getting remarried. So what do you see? Seems pretty clear that what you see is that one witness is believed. Otherwise, how in the world could she remarry? She's a married woman. Okay. So and so here we go. An Amud of Gemara entertaining this idea that we're going to believe one witness. Okay. And the punchline is, we don't believe one witness. And if that's the punchline, so we're back going to get thrown back to square one. So how could she remarry? Okay. Okay, good. So everyone knows what's going to happen in the Gemara. Let's see it inside. So and the Gemara says, and I'll show you another Mishnah that seems to support this idea as well. You can allow her to remarry even through aid mi pi aid hearsay. Generally speaking, in a court of Jewish law, there's no hearsay. Meaning you need eyewitness testimony. The witnesses who actually saw the act, the scene of the crime, the loan, whatever the action point is, you need those witnesses to come forward and testify. They can't relay the information to somebody else who then in turn will relay the information to Beis Din. That doesn't work that way. That's called aid mi pi aid. Generally speaking, that doesn't work. Here it does. In allowing a woman to remarry, it does. The isha mi pi isha, a woman can hear from another woman. Isha mi pi evad, mi pi shivcha, a woman can hear from an evad or a shivcha. Women normally cannot testify in a court of law. You're right. That's true. Here they can. Once again, you see that even we don't follow, when it comes to allowing a woman to remarry, we don't follow the normal rules and laws of testimony. So you see that one witness is believed. And the Gemara says, and I'll show you a Mishnah. Another Mishnah. If one witness says that you ate chalav. Okay, so one witness comes over to me and says, you know, you ate chalav. Chalav, the forbidden fats of an animal. And I say, nah, I didn't. I don't know what you're talking about. What you saw me eat, that wasn't chalav. Right? Next time, get a better pair of glasses and take a better look. And please mind your own business. But no, I didn't. I didn't eat chalav.
In terms of the woman, giving her permission to marry, why is it not called a stumbling block? Because in one way,
So again, question's excellent. Let's first just get through the Gemara in terms of the flow, and then I'll come back. I'll pause later to discuss. So taima de amar lo achalti ha'ishtik mammon. Now, what does that mean? It means, however, that a denial is going to get him out of a carbon. But if he doesn't deny, one witness says you ate chalav. Okay, I don't know. I don't know. And he doesn't even respond. He's just quiet. So then he's believed. Meaning, the Mishnah doesn't say it, but it seems pretty clear. Meaning, because the Mishnah says, if I deny and I contradict the one witness, so then I don't have to bring a carbon. Implicit in that statement is that if I say nothing, I have to bring a carbon. So menalan. So a witness is believed min haTorah. And where do we know this from? How do we know that one witness is believed? So again, what the Gemara is going to do is take us, now it's less than an amud, but the next 20, 30 lines of Gemara is all going to be predicated on this assumption that one witness is believed. And it's funny, the Gemara is spending so much time on this. There's a lot of real estate dedicated to this topic of whether or not one witness is believed. There seems to be something to it, and if time will permit later on, I'll get back to whether or not there's something to it. Because essentially the Gemara is going to end up by saying, no, it's not true. Well, right now what the Gemara thinks is believed because he's believed. That's right now what the Gemara thinks. Your point is not only excellent, but the Gemara later on is gonna look at your point.
But let me say that in terms of Asurot,
We'll get to that. That's coming up later. So Minalan Detanya. Oh, the Torah describing where a person has to bring a carbon chatas. When does a person have to bring a carbon chatas? When he's a shogeg. When he inadvertently violated one of the 34 Yisurim in the Torah that has a chiyuv kares. Right? Masechta Krisos, first mission over there, goes over the, I said 34, there's really 36, but two of them are positive commandments. So 34 times in the Torah where if you violate one of those Yisurim in the Torah, you have to bring a carbon chatas. But if it was inadvertent. Inadvertent, and you have to come to the realization. But let's say witnesses come over to you and tell you, and you don't contradict. So that's what the Torah is telling us, is that if you were informed, you still have to bring a carbon chatas. Gemara says, now, what is the Torah describing? If two witnesses come over to you and say, hey, did you know that you were Michal Shabbos? Right? You drove on Shabbos. Oh, you thought it was Sunday, but it wasn't. It was Saturday, and you drove. So and you don't say anything, meaning you're quiet. Okay, good. The Gemara says, not only good, meaning you have to bring a carbon chatas. You're a shogeg. Witnesses told you. And not only that, but the Gemara says, why would I need a pasuk? Meaning, I, for sure, if two witnesses told me I drive in Shabbos, and I'm not contesting, obviously, they provided the information, and I'm going to have to bring a carbon chatas. So I love chad. So it must be that the Torah is providing a chiddush. What's the chiddush? One witness. So what do you see? You see that one witness is believed. So now the Gemara says, wait a second. What do you mean? What does that mean? They're believed? Maybe not. Maybe it's your silence which is generating the obligation. Meaning, basically, what are you doing with your silence?
Admitting.
That's an admission. Maybe it's not their testimony that's causing you to bring the carbon chatas. They're providing the information, but it's really your silence that's generating the obligation. Because your silence is an admission. You can't incriminate yourself for punishment. We're talking about carbon. Okay. In fact, let's go over the following case. This is a Mishnah Krisus. Mishnah over there says, two people come over to you and say that you ate chalev. And you say, nope, didn't eat chalev. So the machlok is between Tanakama and Ramer. Tanakama says, okay, you deny, even in the face of two, you don't have to bring a carbon. Rabbi Meir says, Rechayv. I'm Rabbi Meir, Kavacham. Rabbi Meir says, look, I can argue my position. Look, Rabbi Meir says, do you know what two witnesses can do? They can execute me. I mean, they, meaning through Beis Din, but their credibility is such where I can get executed based on their testimony. So you don't think I'm going to bring a carbon based on their testimony? Carbon, a cow, it's obviously bringing a carbon is a lot lighter than being executed. So the Chachamim say back to Reb Meir, not a good kal v'chomer. What are we talking about? We're talking about where two witnesses say that you violated Shabbos b'shogeg. You can respond and you could say, and you're chayv a carbon. And you could say back, shogeg, please. I knew what today was. I knew it was Shabbos. I drove amazing. The point being is that the witnesses coming and saying that you violate something with shogeg, they don't know your intent. They don't know your mindset. They don't know that you were a shogeg. You could just as well say, I wasn't a shogeg, I was amazing. It's just simply a way of saying they don't know what you were thinking. So that can't be a valid testimony about a karban. So Reisha, my time come chavi rabbanan ilam mishum demehemen. So the Gemara says, now let's go back to the first case of that Mishnah. First case of that Mishnah where there was one witness, and you argue with that first witness. So you're not obligated. If you were silent, you are obligated. So my time come chavi rabbanan ilam mishum demehemen veha hare ba'ama. So the Gemara says, look, it's certainly not based, it's not based on the credibility, because if two come over to you, according to the Chacham, not according to Rav Meir, if two come over to you and tell you that you're Chayv a Karban, and you say, no, get lost, You don't have to bring it. So Allah, Mishum Dishti Vishtika Ko Dadami. Do you know why when you're silent you have to bring? It's not because of the credibility of the two witnesses or the one witness. It has to do with your silence. Your silence is what's creating the chiyuv. That's the obligation to bring a karban. It's not the credibility. So the Gemara is saying now, it's not one witness is credible. It's that one witness is providing the information, and you, by you being silent, that is tantamount to you tacitly agreeing and approving, yeah, you're right. Oh yeah, I am obligated to bring a carbon. So elasvarihi. So the Gemara says, okay. So now we're still the Gemara is still trying to resuscitate this argument that we believe one witness. Now I know we just showed that it's not in that particular case by the Mishnah Krisos there was no evidence that was demonstrated over there because the Gemara successfully argued it's not the witnesses, it's not the one witness, it's your silence. Your silence is really the cause of you bringing a karban. Good. So the Gemara says, so how about this? Let's make an argument. So let's say there's a piece of fat in front of you. Now, some of the fats of an animal are permitted, shuman, and some of them are prohibited, chalev. And what does it depend on? What part of the animal it's taken from? Okay, so when we went through Chulin, and God willing, when we'll go through Chulin again, so we're going to go through the anatomy of an animal, and we'll know which parts are okay, which parts are not. We're really not going to know. We're just going to
learn.
we'll learn together. To know, you got to go to the farm. So but anyway, fine. And you don't know what this piece is. It's a chalev, it's a shuman. And one person comes over to you and says to you, oh, that's fine. Oh, I saw where the butcher cut that from. That's fine. And he's believed. Oh, one witness is believed. So me, dami, asam lo is chazik isura. Hacha is chazik isura. So the Gemara says, no. That's not good. That's not a good argument. You're right, but don't go anywhere from that case. You're right in that case, but in that particular case, what's going on? That is one witness, but there's no chezkas isur. There's no established isur. One witness cannot change a chazaka. Two witnesses are needed to change a chazaka, but not one. If we don't know what the status of that piece of fat was, whether it was shuman or chalev, okay, so one witness can come and clarify. But one witness cannot tell us which, cannot convert something which we know to have been usser to that which is mutter. The time is not going to permit me. Please take a look. How do we know that one witness can even do that? Can even clarify? So that's Ben mentioned it previously. Take a look at Tosfos over here. It's Tosfos Divra Amaschil Barili Deshuman Mehemen. See, third Tosfos on the summer. So he discusses how we even know that one witness can clarify an issue. Okay, I'm not going to go through it now. I highly recommend. Okay, so the Gemara says Hacha is Chazik Isura. So I'm sorry. Hacha, back to the Gemara. Mi dami. Hasam lo is Chazik Isura. Hacha is Chazik Isura. Deishas Ish. Vein Davish Abeva Pachas Mishnayim. So the Gemara says, look over here. She's married. We all know she was married, and now you want to tell us that she's not married? So they're changing her status. You need two witnesses. Let's say that we all know that this was chalev. And one witness comes over and says, you know, hey, guys, it's not chalev. Shuman. Okay, he can't do that. He does not have the halachic ability to change a chazaka. The Gemara still argues. The Gemara says, look, if we know that was chalev, you can have 100 people coming and telling us it's otherwise. It's like somebody coming over and saying, hey, you know, the color of my jacket is white. Okay, it's not. It's black. Okay. Okay, fine. So the Gemara says that's. But over here, there is a way to change the chazak of a woman. If two come and tell us that she is that her husband died, we're going to believe them. So the Gemara says, okay. So if two can come, so one can come. So again, the Gemara is still trying to argue this point that one witness is believed. Mita davia teva hektish for kanamas. So the Gemara says, you know, it's analogous to tevel, to hektish and to konam. Hi, Tevel Echidam. The Gemara over here just wants to iron it out. What are we talking about when we say Tevel? We know Tevel is untithed produce, but specifically, if it's your own Tevel, you have credibility over something which you own because it's biyado. Anything you can correct, you are believed to testify about. Big principle comes up time and again throughout the Gemara. Here we see it straight up. Ela da Acher. Somebody else's tevil. You can testify about somebody else's tevil. Really? Gemara says, "My kasav, ikasav, tar mishalal shal chavero, and it's tarach das bale mishum diviad latakno." If you have the right to take off trumas and mitzvahs on other people's produce without their authorization, so we're back to biyado. So do you know why one witness is believed? Because you can take care of it. But vi kasav tarach das bale va'amar ani adana be demetakin hu so gufa minalan. And so what? So if we're taking the position that you cannot, on an unauthorized basis, take off trumas and mitzvahs off somebody else's produce, so we're going to ask the question straight out. How do we know that one person's believed? And hektesh nami kedushas nami mishum dibayad liftoso. And if it's hektesh, and it's your hektesh, and you can redeem it, so the Gemara says, wonderful, it's biyado. So one witness is believed. And ikedushas aguf idide mishum dibayad lishuelav. And if it had kedushas aguf, oddly enough, you're also believed. What are you going to say? You're going to say, I went to a chacham, and I retroactively annulled my original consecration, which you can do. That's also biyado. Ela da acher. V'amar yadana be, di'isho mar ye Allah. And so, therefore, what the case is that it was somebody else's, and you said, oh, don't worry, I know it was a karban, but he asked a shayla, I'm telling you he did. The Gemara says, he gufa minolan. Well, how do you know he could do that? Konamos, and just ironing out the last one. Konam nami kasav yeshmila bekonamos v'kedushas damim nachtelohu mishum dibiyad luftoso. If konam gives something kedushas damim, so and he can redeem it. So if he can redeem it, it's biyado. Ikasav eime ila bekonamos v'isra ba'amahu derachiv alaya katfei. And if konam is just a regular neder, so idide mishum dibiyad lechule ala. And again, if it belongs to him, he can ask the chacham to be released from the neder. And ela adah. So it must be belonging to somebody else. And I know that somebody else has a question in it. He gufa minalan. So once again, how do I know? Okay, so Eddie, here we go. Finally, after all said and done, how do we know that one witness is believed? So the Gemara says one witness is not believed. I know the Gemara doesn't say that. It's okay. Right now, I'll say it. One witness is not believed. If one witness is not believed, so how can she get married? Because of all the chumras that are going to be imposed on her at the end, if she's wrong, he kalt Allah b'tchila, so therefore we're going to be makel upon her originally. Meaning that this is going to go beyond what is quote-unquote normative halacha. Normally, we're going to assume she's married. But she'll research and she'll do the due diligence. And if she's wrong, then she's going to get penalized. And so the Gemara says, "Lo lachmir v'lo leiko." The Gemara says, "How about this? How about don't? All right? How about just leave it alone?" So the Gemara says, "Mishum iguna kilobar rabbanan." The Gemara says, "Yeah, but it's aguna." Meaning, if we don't allow her to take the risk, so then she's going to be an aguna for the rest of her life. So therefore, as a result of aguna, so therefore the chachamim are relaxed. Okay, what I'll start with tomorrow is, it's a pivotal moment in the Gemara. Good, one witness is not believed. That seems to be the Gemara's conclusion, even though Gemara spent an amud trying to argue that one witness is believed. It seems like she's not believed. So now the Gemara says, okay, so she will get penalized, so therefore she's allowed to get married. But that doesn't explain how she can get married. All that explains is why she can get married. Because the Chachamim were sensitive to the idea that she's going to be an aguna for the rest of her life. But in other words, but how? Meaning, halakhically, what's the mechanism that allows that to work? Stay tuned, that's the first thing I'll be discussing tomorrow.